We're holding on them. Vav Omid Beis, 11 lines from the bottom. Started learning yesterday about the importance of the mitzvah of levoya, of accompanying another person, another yid when he's leaving, show him the right way, daven on his behalf, etc. So continuing on that topic, the Gemara says, Omid Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Meir. Kol she'ena malava or mislava, a person who does not accompany others, or mislava, or is not accompanied by others, meaning it could mean that he says to the people, I don't need you to accompany me. It can mean that he, when there's nobody else available to accompany him, he doesn't learn Torah, as we learned yesterday. That would be a levoya for him. So whatever, he has nothing to do with levoya. Ke'ilu shofech damim is as if he's spilling blood. And we see that, we see, because if the people of Yericha had accompanied Elisha when he was leaving their city, then he wouldn't have incited bears against children. So the story in brief is, in Sefer Melachim, it tells how shortly after Elisha became the head Navi, after Eliyahu and Navi had gone up to Shemaim, the people of Yericha say to him that it's a very beautiful city to live in, as Gemara is going to explain soon. But the water over here is very bad, and it's causing people to be sick and to miscarry. So Elisha goes, and he says, put in salt over there, and Hashem says, from now on, the water will be good. And sure enough, it was. From then on, it became good, clear, clean water. So now, the pasuk continues, as Elisha was leaving the city, so it says, that Ne'orim Ktanim, literally Ne'orim Ktanim means young boys, but Gemara is going to ask in a second, that Ne'orim suggests boys who are over by mitzvah, and Ktanim suggests boys who are under, so we'll see in a second. Anyway, they go and they start making fun of him, and they say, Alei Kereach, Alei Kereach, go away baldy, go away baldy. So then, Meforishim explain on a simple level, they're making fun of. Look at this, you're nothing like your Rebbe Eliyahu. He had lots of hair, as we find in Psukim, whereas you're bald. But obviously, there was more to it than that, because the pasuk continues that he turned around and he saw them and cursed them in Hashem's name, and bears came out of the forest and killed 42 of them. So obviously, if they were just making fun of his appearance, it wouldn't have warranted such a severe punishment. So therefore, the Gemara is going to go into the story and darshan what exactly happened over here.
But that's the fact that they knew that he's a Talmud of...
They knew he's a Talmud of Eliyahu, of course. Anyway, the point is, though, that if there had been people from Yericho with him, then these Ne'orim, whatever age they were, would have been afraid to start up with him, and the whole thing would have been avoided. So therefore, the problem was that Elisha was going by himself. So Shanema, as the pasuk says, Vayal Misham Beisel, he was going up from there, from Yericho to Beisel. Yericho is in a valley, Beisel is in a mountain, so he's literally going up. Rohu Oila Baderech, he was going up on the road, which Marsha says, that point, that the fact that it repeats those words, he was going up on the road, stresses the point that he was walking by himself, as opposed to anybody else being with him. So there we see that there was no Levoya.
Up to help his gives himself.
Yeah, because otherwise he doesn't have to say Vahu Oyla Baderech. Vayal Misham, he went up from there. So then when it says Vahu and he, Oyla Baderech, means only he and not anybody else. Anyway, in the Orim Ktanim Yotzim in a year, young boys came out of the city, Vayiskal Sibay, and they made fun of him. Vayimrulay, Alei Kereach, Alei Kereach. And they said, go away, baldy, go away, baldy. So why the expression? What do they mean by Alei Kereach? Omrulo, they said, Alei, go away from here. She krachta aleinu asamlokim. You made the place bald for us. Meaning, Rashi explains that they used to, as long as the water of Yericho was unsuitable to drink, then some people were drinking it and they were miscarrying. That's what they were complaining to Elisha. But these boys used to make a living. They would bring water from other places and sell it to the people of Yericho, and they would make their living that way. So now that he sweetened the water, then you made the place bold for us. Now we can't make that profit anymore. In a way that it shows their lack of emunah, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, it shows also they were more willing to profit off the misery of fellow Jews. But still, so the Gemara says, "Mayim Ne'orim Ktanim." So what do we mean? Why are we calling them Ne'orim Ktanim? Again, a Nair means above by mitzvah, Shtei Cyrus, and then Ktanim means below it. The word Ne'orim means they were shaken off of mitzvahs. They were completely empty of mitzvahs. And Ktanim, showing the Ktani Amona, and they were called Ktanim because they had little Amuna, because they're worried what's going to happen with our Parnosa. They didn't realize Hashem has many other ways of supplying Parnosa for them. So in other words, neither Ne'orim and Ktanim is meant to represent their actual age. But the Parshas, the Gemara is bothered by if they were little kids, then they can't be punished in a Shemayim. They're not fully responsible for what they do. Anyway, so that's one explanation. Tona, then we learn in a Braisa a different explanation. Na'orim Hayu, they were in fact Na'orim. They were young men above the age of Bar Mitzvah. But they acted in a derogatory and disrespectful way like children by making fun of him. But Rabbi Yosef says, why do we need to assume b'chlal that Na'orim tells us anything about what age they were or what or how or that they were Na'orim in a mitzvah? The Dilmal Shem Mekoyman. Maybe the word Na'orim is after where they came from. Maybe they came from the city of Na'aron or Na'uron, which is mentioned. It's actually a city in Eretz Yisrael mentioned in Divrei Hayamim. Miloiksiv, after all, don't you have a pasuk elsewhere in Malachim? Va'arom yotzuk dudim, it describes how the Arami soldiers used to go out in bands, in other words, even when they weren't actually fighting open battles against the Jews, sometimes they were going out in bands to raid Eretz Yisrael. Va'yishbu me'eretz Yisrael nairaktana, and they captured from Eretz Yisrael a young girl, and the pasuk goes on to describe when Naaman had Saras, she's the one who said to Naaman's wife that he should go to the Navi to be cured. Anyway, so the question is again the kasha on Nairo Ktana. So we have the same question: was she a Nairo or was she a Ktana? But Omer Pados, it means Ktana demin Neuron, means she was a Ktana, but she was from the city of Neuron or Naaron. So by the same token over here, why don't we say that Neorim Ktanim means Ktanim from the city of Naaron? The answer is Hosim Lo Mefarish Mekoma, because in the pasuk with this girl who was captured by the Aramim and then worked in Naaman's house, doesn't say where she was from. So therefore, other than that, doesn't say in the pasuk where she's from. So we have good right to assume that she came from Naaron. Hachem Mefurash Mekoyman. Here it says they came out of the city. The Una'on Kanim Yotzu Minair is the expression in the pasuk, implying that they actually lived in Yericho. So therefore, there's no reason to assume they lived in Naaron. Okay, fine. So now the pasuk continues by Yifan Achar of Ayurim. He turned around behind him and he saw them. By Kalalim B'Shem Hashem, and he cursed them in Hashem's name. So first of all, so Maro. So what did he see? So the question is really twofold. First of all, why does it need to say Ra anyway? Obviously, if he turned around, why does it need to say by Yirim? If he turned around, obviously he saw them. And second of all, Marisha explains, you're not allowed to curse a fellow Yid. So what did he see on them that warranted such a severe punishment? So Omar Rav, Ra'a Mamash. So Rav says literally, it means seeing in the sense, Kedetanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Rav Shimon Gamliel, Mokam Shinosnu Chachamim Einayim, wherever the Chachamim put their eyes on somebody in a harsh way, when they're looking at somebody because in a punishing way, Oy Misa, Oy Oyni. The result is either the person dies or he becomes poor. So in other words, here, the Vayirim, Vayikalim, he didn't explicitly curse them in Hashem's name. It's also to do that to a fellow Yid, but he gave them a look which itself was a curse, and that caused them to die. That's Rav. Shmuel Amar Rosh Kolnis Abra Ben Iman B'Yemakipurim. Shmuel says he saw the Ruach HaKodesh that all of them, their mothers, had conceived them on Yom Kippur, which means, of course, that all their parents had done something which is also on Yom Kippur, because Tashmish Amita is one of the things that's also on Yom Kippur. So he realized that and realized, therefore, that they're not only they themselves are acting badly, but like in their origin already, they're no good. Marsha points out, you would have to say that he had the Kabbalah, that it was that. Otherwise, why is he mentioned specifically on Yom Kippur? He could have said, Shmuel could have said he saw that they were all born from Yiddish. He could have said they saw that they were all Mamzerim or whatever. So evidently, Shmuel had the Kabbalah that it was that for Yom Kippur was the issue here. Rabbi Yitzchak Natfa'ama, Bluris Ra'alehen. Rabbi Yitzchak Natfa says another one. He saw that all of them were wearing a bluris, which is a goyish hairstyle. The hairstyle of a bluris was basically the hair was shaved in front and then left to grow long in back. And it was a goyish style in those days. Even much later, you find it in here and there in chats. The Greeks and Romans used to wear that kind of hairstyle. So showing again that they were acting completely like goyim, ke'emodium, like the way the emodium wear it. So again, it shows that they're not even acting even b'chitzonius as Jews. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Rosh Lachosavam Lachluchas Shal Mitzvah. Rabbi Yochanan says it means he saw there's not even any moisture of a mitzvah in them. They don't even have the slightest bit of a mitzvah. So in any case, so this Ra, so Vayar means Vayirein means that not just that he saw them physically, but that he saw Baruchnius that they're completely flawed like that. There's something wrong with them. But the question is, on Rabbi Yochanan's one about Lach Luchas Shal Mitzvah, the Duma Bezara Ayun Niya Vahava, still maybe their descendants would have had mitzvahs. Amar Abelazo, Loi Bomb, Loi Bezanam, Atsoi Kaladaris, Elisha knew, Elisha saw, Beruah HaKodesh, that neither they nor their descendants are going to have any mitzvahs until the end of all generations. So therefore, in other words, he figured there's no great, there's no great harm in having them removed from the Jewish people. Nonetheless, as the Gemara is going to say soon, he was punished that he became sick for a while after that, because after all, he still shouldn't have. They're fourth Yiddish kids, and he still shouldn't have. Okay. The pasuk continues. Vatitzena shtayim dubim min hayar. Two bears came out of the forest. Vatvakana mehem aboyim shnei yelodim, and they broke open, they killed of them 42 children. So why that? So first of all, what? Why that for 42? We're going to talk about why that for two. Okay, the Gemara doesn't really focus on why there were two bears. The Gemara is going to focus more on why 42 of them were killed. But first, Rav and Shmuel argue what exactly was the nest over here. One says there was only one nest, and the other one says there was a nest inside a nest. Manda Omen Nes, the one who says that there was one Nes, Yar Hava, up until that point there had been a forest there, Dubim Loi Havu, but up until that point there hadn't been bears in the forest, and the reason is, he said that he has to assume there were no bears, because otherwise these kids would have been afraid to walk around there. If it's known to be infested with bears, they wouldn't stand me walking over there. So therefore, that implies that until now, there's a forest there, but there's no bears. So therefore, the nest was that Hashem created bears, that Hashem brought bears there on the spot to kill them.
Usually during the day, we have a large crowd of people that are bears on
the head. Nonetheless, though, the fact is, we're saying that, yeah. Well, manda om a nest, besides nest, the one who says there was a nest within a nest, lo yar have of lo dubim have. Up until that point, there hadn't been a forest, and there hadn't been bears. In modern Hebrew, by the way, they use the expression lo dubim v'lo yar to mean, like you say, like in Yiddish, nishke gestoig and nishke floig, and the whole thing never happened, but that's not what the Gemara means over here. He's not saying, chas v'shalom, the nest never happened, but okay, he's saying there was nothing there until now, neither forest nor bears, and Hashem created them both on the spot over there.
So there's only water there.
Yeah, but no, there wasn't water. There was a road.
That's the water where the kids were.
No, that was before. That he had purified the water, yeah. Okay. Anyway, so the Gemara asks, according to that opinion, v'lehevi dubim v'lehevi yar, so why does Hashem have to do that? Let him just bring over there bears and not a forest. And the answer is to be easy. Then they would be afraid. Who's they would be afraid? Rashi says it means the bears. If there's no forest for the bears to run off into, they would be afraid to attack people. So therefore, according to that, Hashem had to create a forest on the spot there also in order that the bears shouldn't be afraid to attack them. Marashah says actually what we mean is, we mean the kids. If there hadn't been a forest over there and the bears were just walking around in the open road, then the kids would have seen them from afar and they would have run away. So therefore, Hashem had to create a forest so the bears can be concealed until they attack them. All right. The Gemara says, why that for 42? So the Gemara says,
bears could be something else.
Yeah, whatever, they actually chose bears in this case. Amar Panina, I think actually Mephoshim say that maybe it has something to do with the fact that they called him Kereach, baldy, like he has no hair. A bear particularly has a lot of hair, a lot of fur, so therefore Hashem chose that as the thing. Okay. Because of the 42 korbanos that Balak Melech Moav brought when he and Bilam were trying to curse the Jews, because of that, generations later, 42 Jewish children were killed by the bears. In other words, even though Golak wasn't able to accomplish what he wanted to at the time, but still it had an effect. And later on, when you had kids who, like we said before, they were born, they were conceived by Avera, and they had no trace of mitzvahs, etc., then there was room for the klala to land on them. So the Gemara asks, Amy, is that so? You're telling me that that was Golak's reward? A person should always be occupied with Torah and mitzvahs, even if he does it shaloi l'shma. From doing it shaloi l'shma, he'll eventually come to doing it l'shma. And we see it as an example. We see in the schus of the 42 korbanos that Balak Melech Moav brought, you have three times he and Bilam tried to curse the Jewish people. Each time Bilam tells him, build 7 mizbechas and bring on each one a par and an aisle, so therefore there are 14 korbanos in each of 3 places makes 42. Anyway, Zachav Yotzim Mena Rus, Shiyotzim Mena Shloima. He had the schus that Rus descended from him, and in turn that Shloima descended from Rus. Shekosibe Elof Olas Yala Shloima, where it says that Shloima brought 1,000 korbanos at a time. So therefore, so that was his reward, that he brought korbanos Shaloi Lishma, and in the end he had a descendant Shloima who brought korbanos Lishma. And how do we know that they're related? Because Va'omer of Yosef Ben Choni, Rus Vite shall Eglon, Bnei shall Balak. Ruth was the daughter of Eglon, who in turn was the son of Balak. Tosfos elsewhere says that literally means son and daughter. There were generations between them, but we mean that she was a descendant of Eglon, the king of Moab, who in Sefer Shoftim, he stands up in Hashem's honor, and then Ehud stabs him, but he stood up, and Ehud told him, I have a message to you from Hashem, and he stood up in respect, so therefore we have this source that Ruth was his descendant, and he in turn was a descendant of Balak. So we see therefore that was Balak's reward.
Did he actually
indeed
have a message
for him? No, he was using it as an excuse to stab him because he had been oppressing the Jewish people for many years. But the point is, he didn't know that. Anyway, so the point is, in other words, that was Balak's reward. By the way, in other places in Shas, the Gemara distinguishes between different kinds of Shaloi Lishma, of Shaloi Lishma. There's Shaloi Lishma because, for example, I want to be famous, I want to be called a Talmid Chacham, and the Shaloi Lishma, I want to use the Torah and the mitzvahs as a way of attacking other people. Now, wasn't Balak doing that? He's trying to attack the Jewish people. So Tosfos and some other places in Shas explain, including Udi and Armasechta, explain that not really his main purpose was that he thought the Jews were a danger to him. So it's not that he wasn't doing it so much to attack them, but like to remove what he saw as a potential harm. So therefore, that can be considered Shaloi Lishma, that goodness to Lishma, and the result was that Shloima descends from him.
If wasn't for...
Okay, you know, we have a lot of ground to cover, yeah. Okay, the Gemara answers, Tavose Mir Klola Havi, that's true. Nonetheless, though, he did have intentions for Klola, and therefore, so it's true, you really have both. On the one hand, you have he brought Korbanos, Shaloi Lishem Shemayim, but Shaloi Lishma, and eventually there came from that Lishma, but there is also, he did mean for a curse against the Jewish people, and eventually it came about now when these kids were killed, again, yet you have, it wasn't able to have an effect as long as the Jewish people are learning Torah and keeping mitzvahs, but once you have these kids who have none of the above, then there's room for the Klola to land on them. Okay. Getting back to Elisha, the Pasuk says a few psukim earlier when they're telling him about the problem with the water, by Yomru Ansher Ir Elisha, the people of the city said to Elisha, Hine no Moshe va'ir toiz kasher geni roya v'gemer. Look, the settlement of the city is very good, as my master sees, but they go on to say the water is no good. So the Gemara asks, so how does the first half of the Pasuk fit with the second? If the water is bad and it's causing people to miscarry and to get sick, then what's the good of the city? What do I mean, Moshe Va'ir Tov? What's so good about it if the whole water supply over there is messed up? This is an example of you have Hashem makes the place where a person lives be graceful and beautiful to him, even if objectively it's not. So it's true. If another person came and looked at that city, he'd say, why does anybody bother living there? It's a horrible place. But Hashem made it that people live in a certain place. Hashem gives them a natural desire and then makes the place seem beautiful in their eyes, even if objectively there are problems with it. And Omer Rav Yechanan, Shloi Shechina, saying, in fact, there are three kinds of unnatural chen like that. Chen Mokam al Yoshev, the fact that a place seems beautiful to the people who live there. Chen Isha al Baila, the fact that a woman is beautiful to her husband, again, even if objectively she's not beautiful. And Chen Mekach al Mekachai, or Loitchai, really, it's supposed to say, and the beauty of a purchase to the one who bought it, meaning, again, you may have somebody buys something, objectively, it's not very good, but Hashem makes it that he should like it because that. And the point is, each of these things is necessary in order for the world to function. For example, Marsha points out, as far as places to live, we learned yesterday that Adam Rishon decided in advance where everybody, what places should be settled and what places should not, but he didn't decide who's going to live where. So Hashem wants that a certain place should be settled, so he made it then that people who settle there like the place, even though objectively they should not. And the same thing with a wife. If you had only the ones who are objectively beautiful got married, then most people would never get married. So therefore, Hashem makes it that they feel that their wife is graceful and beautiful, even if objectively she's not. And the same thing with things that are bought and sold. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. We learn in a Braisa, Shloisha Chaloyin Chola Elisha. Three times in his life, Elisha got sick. One is because, again, because he incited bears against the children. So even though it was saying before, he had a valid reason for it. They made fun of him, in a way that people are now going to disrespect the VM, and they were going to order him in a mitzvah, and so on and so forth. Nevertheless, they're fourth yiddish, and he shouldn't have done that. The echad shadoch for the geichazi b'shteya died. Another one is because he pushed geichazi away with both hands, meaning, as the Gemara is going to explain soon, the story that when geichazi took. So let's recap the story briefly. The Gemara is going to give it in a little detail over here. You have the story again. You have the story of Naaman. We have Saras. It's not Torah. Parshas Tazria. So he goes to Kitzra Maisi. He goes to Elisha. Elisha tells him to dip 7 times in the Yarden, and then he's cured. He's overjoyed. He wants to give Elisha lots of gold and silver and whatnot. And Elisha turns it down. Then Gehazi says to himself, why should all that money go and stay by the Arami? And he runs after Naaman, claims that new Talmidim just came to the yeshiva and Elisha sent me to get money for them. And Naaman ends up giving him. And then when he comes back to the Beis Medrash, then Elisha curses him with tzaras. And he says, you and your descendants will have tzaras forever. So that's Durch of the Shteya Daim. He pushed him away with both hands. Like, in other words, as opposed to, the Gemara is going to say soon, you really need to have Yamin the Karevis to smell Durch. You may push away the person with the left hand, but you first have to bring them close with the right hand, give them an opportunity to do tshuva. And Elisha didn't do that. He just pushed Gehazi away and said, you're completely rejected. And therefore, for that, at some point in his life, Elisha became sick. The Echad Shemespa, and the third one was a natural thing that eventually Elisha passed away. The pasuk says that Elisha became sick with the sickness from which he eventually died. So Rashi explains the fact that it says chola and cholya and asher yomuspoy, that implies 3 different sicknesses. So chola means he was sick once in his life. Cholya means a second sickness, and asher yomuspoy means the third one that he died from. So since we don't find anything else during his career that Elisha did wrong except for these things, therefore the Gemara attributes the sicknesses to these things. By the way, the Gemara mentions in Bava Metzia that until Elisha's time, there was nobody who ever recovered from a dangerous sickness. So therefore, the implication would be that Elisha would have died even the first time or the second time from having the bears attack the children or from pushing away Gehazi, except that his chosin protected him and he was able to continue living. But yeah. So turn on the bottom, we learn in a braisa. Lo'olam te smel doicha v'yamin v'karevis. Always the left hand should push away and the right hand should bring close. The right hand is stronger, it's the hand you use more, so therefore it implies, in other words, that mainly you should be pulling close. When you have to push away, it should be with the weaker hand, with the left hand. In other words, don't ever reject a Talmud or whatever just completely and tell him, go away, I don't want to ever see you again. Give him an opening for tshuva. Not like Elisha who pushed away Gehazi with both hands, and not like Yeshua ben Prachya pushed away one of his Talmidim with his both hands. Now here it just says Echam mitalmidim. The older Gemaras don't even have this part at all because it's talking about Yeshua Noitzvi, who, as we'll talk in a second, some say is the same one as the one the Christians believe in. But in any case, the correct Girsa, that's an uncensored Gemara, is not Echam mitalmidim, but Yeshua Noitzvi. Now there is a big machloikas we're showing him whether Yeshua Noitzvi of this story is in fact the same as Yoizel, the one that the Goyim believe in. For example, that Ramban, now here you have, he's in the time of Rabbi Shimon Prachya, who's 100 years before the one that they believe, before the one that they claim to believe in. Yeshua ben Prachya was in the middle of the second Beis Hamikdash. They place him about 100 years later. That Ramban says it's actually the same person, and the Goyim deliberately dated him earlier because they wanted to be able to claim that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed as punishment for not believing. On the other hand, a number of Rishonim, Rabbi Yechiel of Paris, when he had to debate against the Goyim, the Meiri in his Sefer and various other Rishonim say that no, in fact, they're 2 different people. The one of our Gemara over here, Taka, lived 100 years earlier, and then 100 years later, you have the one that the Christians believe in, and then he's not the one, according to that, he's not the one mentioned in the Gemara. But again, according to the Ramban, it is the same one. Anyway, the censors obviously thought that it is the same one, so therefore they took out this whole part. In older Gemaras, you won't find it at all. They finally put it back in newer Gemaras. So the Gemara says, Elisha Maidi, what's the story with Elisha pushing away Gehazi? So like this, Vayomer Naaman, so when Gehazi comes to Naaman and claims that new Talmidim have just come and I have to get money for them, so Vayomer Naaman, Hoyo Kach Kikarayim, please be willing to take two kicker. Geichazi is asking for one kicker of silver. Naaman says, by all means, take two. So Geichazi takes it and he puts it away, stores it away, and then he comes into the Beis Medrash. And it says a few psukim later, by Yomer Elov, when Elisha asks Geichazi, where have you been? And Geichazi says, no place special. By Yomer Elov, and Elisha says to him, Loi Libi Holach, don't you think my heart went with you? Don't you realize, in other words, that I know exactly what happened? Kasha Hofach Ishmael Mekabte Lekrasecha, when the man, meaning Naaman, turned backwards from his chariot to see you, meaning Elisha was bothered by the fact that now the Kiddush Hashem has been undone. He had cured Naaman and said, I'm not going to take payment, and it made a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. Now Naaman is going to think that Elisha only did it for money. So he says, Ha'eis l'kachas l'kesef, do you think that it's now the time to be taking silver? V'l'kachas v'godim v'zeisim v'chromim, and to take clothing and olive groves and vineyards with sonovoka and cattle and sheep and cattle, ba'avodim u'shvachas and servants and maidservants. So the Gemara interjects, and we shock with Pula Highway, and Geichazi didn't take all those eight things. High kesef u'godim would be shocked, though. Sachakol, the posuk says, all he took from Naaman was silver and a couple of changes of clothing. So Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, but Oisa Shah Haya Elisha Oisik Mishmona Shratzim. What happened was, when Geichazi walked into the Beis Medrash, Elisha at that point was teaching about Shmona Shratzim. The Perek in Masechta Shabbos actually explains that begins Shmona Shratzim, that talks about the Dinim. Now we know, you have the Shmona Shratzim are, they're also to eat, of course. They're also the only eight of creatures in the class of Shratzim that are Mekame when they're dead. But the Perek of Shabbos begins over there with the dinim of them as far as a certain din of Hilchas Shabbos, as far as wounding them, as far as bruising them, that a person is chayev for those, unlike, for example, for other small creatures. And the Gemara distinguishes over there because these creatures have skins, so the blood collects underneath. The other small creatures do not. Whatever the case, Elisha was teaching that din at that point when Geichazi walked into this medrash.
You were on Shabbos or you were during the week?
No, we're talking about during the week. If a person bruises such a creature on Shabbos, then he's chayev for the malacha. He's on Shabbos. He's chayev for the malacha of shofet because he causes blood to get collected under the skin as a bruise. Anyway, so Elisha was teaching that point when Geichazi walked into this medrash. Omaloi, so he says, Rosha, he gear ace little schar shmona shratzim, and now the time has come. It can be a rhetorical question. Do you think that now is the time to take the reward of the shmona shratzim? Meaning, you're thinking because you learned Torah from me, including this din of the shmona shratzim, that therefore you're entitled to a reward in this world, and therefore you took the silver and the clothing. And so that's why he mentions eight things. He doesn't mean literally that Geichazi took all those eight things, but now with that money, you're able to buy all those eight things. You're able to use some of that money and clothing to buy olives and then to buy olive groves and vineyards and so forth. And you think that you're going to get the reward for the shmona shratzim. Instead, the tzaras Naaman, tidbak b'chor, v'zarach ol olam, the tzaras of Naaman will stick to you and your descendants forever. So that's the dochag shtei yadayim, that he pushed him away with both hands rather than giving him any opportunity to do tshuva. And sure enough, later on, when it says v'alban nashim hayu mitzrayim, when it says it's an haftarah of mitzrayah, of Parshas Mitzrayim, when it says four men were Mitzrayim outside the gate of Shomer, and Amar Yechon and Geichazi of Shloshes Banav, that means Geichazi and his three children. Why were his children punished as well? Because they helped him out, is because they helped him hide away the loot, is one reason. Anyway, the point is, so that was Elisha pushed him away completely, and therefore Elisha, even though Elisha had a point with it, nevertheless, he shouldn't have been so harsh, and therefore, as we said before, he became sick for a while as a punishment for that. Okay. Next, the Gemara continues. Later on, the Pesukim, it says, Vayelech Elisha Damesek. Or actually, the Pesuk actually says, Vayovay Elisha Damesek. So the question is, Loma Holach, what did he go for? Now, the Pesukim over there, this is in Melachim Beis Perfes, it describes how when Elisha was in Damesek, he meets up over there with Hazoel, who at that time was a minister of the king of Aram, and he tells him the king of Aram is soon going to die, and you're going to be the next king, etc. But the Gemara is bothered by that usually when it says that someone went someplace, it says Vayelech, that he went to the place, and then eventually it says Vayavay. Over here it just says Vayavay Elisha Damesek without saying that he went first. So that implied that he went there for some other purpose, and while he was there, he met up with Chazoel and all of that happened. So, Lama Holach, what did he go to Damesek in the first place for? He went over there to try and get Gehazi to do tshuva. Gehazi had moved to Damascus because since he's in Bethsaida, he's not allowed inside any city in Eretz Israel. So he went to Damascus to live among the goyim over there. We're there for. They won't bother him for it. We see that Naaman was living at home with Tzaraas and everybody's around him, and he himself was bothered by the Tzaraas, which is why he went to Elisha. But we see they didn't make him go outside the city because the goyim don't have those halachas. So therefore, Gehazi had gone there. So now, Elisha went to Damascus to get Gehazi to do tshuva, v'loi chazer, but he didn't do tshuva. Omaloi, because Elisha tells him, chazer v'chad, do tshuva. Omaloi, Gehazi told him, no. Kach mekublani v'imcha, I have the Kabbalah from you, kol mishachotav, v'hechti yisarabim, anybody who not only did Averis, but caused many other people to do Averis, ein maspikin v'yodeh, lasis tshuva, Hashem will not give him an opportunity to do tshuva. Now, it doesn't mean he can't do tshuva. It means Hashem is not, usually Hashem opens up opportunities for a person, a bolitar, Messiah, he or not, he or the person has to put in all the effort himself. But nevertheless, as the Alter Rebbe phrases it in Tanya, im dochak v'nichna, so he pushes his way in and does tshuva, then Hashem will accept him. But Gehazi was using it as an excuse, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second how we see that he's machti as a rabbin, but Gehazi used it as an excuse to say that he's not going to do tshuva.
Even though he came to help him.
Right. So, yeah. So my Ovad, so what did Gehazi do that was machti as a rabbin? Ikadami, some say, Evan she'evas tolol el-chates Yerovam, he put magnets on the chet of Yerovam, on the egle azov that Yerovam had made, v'hemidim, and shemayim la'oretz, and he suspended it between heaven and earth. In other words, so he put magnets and attached to the ego and attached to the walls of the womb or whatever in such a way that it made the ego float in the air. So now, therefore, that caused many more people to think it must be a godly thing, and we should worship it. So therefore, he caused that more people are worshiping that ego azav. The ikadami shem chokk la'puma. Others say that he carved down a name of Hashem in the mouth of the ego. And it was announcing the aseres hadibros, particularly the first two dibros. I am Hashem, you should have no other gods before me. So again, that caused a lot of more people to be misled and think this really is a representation of Hashem and we should worship it. The ikadami rabbonan docham ikamei, others say what Gehazi did, that he was machti asarabim, he pushed away potential tamidim from coming to learn by Elisha. And we see that, so therefore he prevented them from being able to learn by Elisha and become better tamid chachamim, better Jews, like they should be. Dichtiv, and we find in the pasuk right after Gehazi was pushed away, right after it says he got Tzaraas and he left, the next pasuk is by Yerub Ben Neviim al Elisha, the Talmidim of the Neviim said to Elisha, Hine na'amokim asher anachnu yoshvim l'chom panach tzarimenu, look, please, the place where we're sitting in front of you, the Beis Medrash, is too crowded for us. Now, why all of a sudden now are they commenting on us crowded? We call the Adahidin al-Habadahu, implying that up till now it wasn't crowded because Gehazi was taking it on himself to prevent people from coming to the Beis Medrash. Now that he left, now anybody who wants to come learn is coming to learn, so therefore the Beis Medrash became very crowded. So we see that till then he was pushing people away. Okay. So that's the story with Elisha and Gehazi. And again, the Gemara is saying that nevertheless, Elisha was too harsh with Gehazi. He should have been more gentle with him. Like this, he pushed him away completely, and Gehazi went on to do even worse things. So now, Yeshua ben Prachya, what's the story with Yeshua ben Prachya pushing away Oseish? So like this, Kedahava kakoto Yane Ma'akul Rabbanon. There was a time when Yane Amelech, one of the kings of the Hashmonaim, was killing the Chachamim. Yeah, the whole story is in Kedushin. There was questions about Yane's mother, there was a claim that she was a Shiguya, and therefore that she's possibly married to a Koyan, in which case Yane wouldn't be a Koyan, it would be a Cholol. Akitzer, Yane was incited against the Chachamim by the Tzidukim over there, and he ended up killing many of the Chachamim. Anyway, so, Shimon Metzotach was hidden by his sister because his sister was Shloim Tzion, the queen, the wife of Yanai. So she was able to hide him, so Yanai doesn't kill him. Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya, Ozel Orach, like Sanir Shemitzrayim. Meanwhile, Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya, what that time was the Nosi. This is, you have in Pirkei Avos, you have the Zugers over there. So you have Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya and Nitai Harabeli. Then the next generation, you have Yehudim and Tabai and Shimon Metzotach. So right now, we're talking about in that generation, you had Yeshua ben Prachya was the Rebbe, Shimon ben Shattach was the Talmud. The Talmud was able to hide because of his sister hit him, but Rabbi Shimon ben Prachya, the Nasi, Ozel Orach, Lav San Yerusha Mitzrayim, he ran away to Alexandria in Egypt, where he'd be safe. Ki Habashlama, when there was Shalom, when things calmed down, Shalach le Shimon Shatach. So Shimon Shatach's Talmud sent him a message suggesting that he should return. Mini Yerushalayim Irakodesh Loch Alexander Shamitzrayim. The message from me Yerushalayim Irakodesh to you, Alexandria in Egypt. Achoisi, my sister, and Alexandria deserved to be called the sister of Yerushalayim. It had an enormous Jewish community. Alexandria in those days was like the New York of the Jewish world. So like many, many Jews lived there, and therefore he's calling it out of respect, my sister, as though you're like on an equal level in a certain sense, Yerushalayim.
That's why people call the throne Del Dothan Alexandria?
No, that was something else. That's because of Alexander the Great when he met Shimon HaTzadik. I mean, Alexandria, the city, is also named for Alexander, but yeah, there's not really that direct connection. Anyway. So he says, Achoisi, my sister, Bali Shori Besoichet, my husband, meaning my Nasi, is living among you, Rani Yosheves Sheimema, and I'm sitting desolate. In other words, saying that it's time for you to come back. You should be in Yerushalayim. Omar, so when Yeshuman Prachi receives a message, he says, Shema min ha'avala shlama, I see, reading between the lines, there must be shalom, and it's safe for me to return. Dota sort of showed him, in fact, explains, by the way, it's not like officially Yanai had ceased his persecution. It's only in practice, you know, there's how long can you be persecuting and killing Chachamim? Things eventually had calmed down. So that's why Shimon Shatak is only sending him a coded message, and that's why Rabbi Shimon Prachi is only saying, I can see, reading between the lines, that there's Shalom. Shimon Shatak couldn't outright write to him, there's Shalom, come return, because the fact is there wasn't. It was just like a temporary truce. Anyway. So, he also, as Rabbi Shimon Prachi was coming back, he stopped off at a certain inn, Kom Kamayo, the Yikora Shaper, the people over there in the people over there in the inn were standing up in front of him and honoring him, Rabbi Shimon Prachi, very much.
They recognized him,
yeah. Abdullah Yikora Tova, and they were doing tremendous covering for him. Yosef become a shtamach, so Rabbi Shimon Prachi was sitting and praising. Kama no achsanya zu. How beautiful was this achsanya, meaning, in other words, that the people of this inn, the word achsanya, can Rashi actually, so Rashi over here and Sanhedrin actually explains a little bit differently. Here Rashi explains, so over there Rashi explains the word achsanya means the inn, but then we're going to say that the Talmud, Yeshua Noitzri, misunderstood and thought he's talking about the woman innkeeper. Here Rashi says all along, Rabbi Shimon Prachi was talking about the woman, but he meant she's how good she is in her maisim. She's acting in such a beautiful way. Anyway. So one of the Talmidim, again, in uncensored Gemara, it says that Yeshua Noitzri says to him, Rebbe, a neho trutos, her eyes are round. In other words, what are you saying? She's beautiful. So either, in other words, Rabbi Shimon Prachi was praising the inn and the people in it, and this guy takes it wrongly and takes the word, then takes the word ushpiza and takes the word achsanya to mean the woman innkeeper, or that Rabbi Shimon Prachi attacking meant the woman, but he meant how nice she is in her maisim, and this Talmud misunderstands it to mean how beautiful she is. So what do you mean she's beautiful? Her eyes are wet. He says, Rosha, that's what you're involved with, looking at a married woman. So he took out 400 shofars and put them in Cherem. And they had 400 people blow shofars to announce that this Talmud, Yeshua Noitzri, is now in Cherem. So that's the dose of the Shtei Yadayim. Anyway, continues the story. Vashamte, so he put him in Cherem. Every day after that, Yeshu was coming to Rabbi Yeshua to ask for mechila, and Rabbi Shimon Prachi was not accepting him. Yom Echad have a Kore Krishma. One day, Rabbi Shimon Prachi was in the middle of saying Krishma, also lekameh, and at that point, Yeshu came in front of him. Have a bedaita lekabule. By that time, Rabbi Shimon Prachi was thinking already to reaccept him. So he made a motion with his hand that, fine, basically wait till I finish Krishma and then I'll accept you. Yeshu misunderstood the gesture and thought it meant that Yeshua is pushing him away completely. So now he gave up. He went and set up a brick and started worshipping it as an avodah zarah. So afterwards, Omalei Chazur B'cha, later on, Rabbi Shimon Prachi tells him, tells him, do tshuva. Omalei gives him the same answer as Geichzi did to Elisha. Anybody who sins and causes the many people to sin, Hashem won't give him an opportunity to tshuva. Again, this was only an excuse, because in reality, if he had made the effort to do tshuva, Hashem would have accepted him. But where do we see that? It was that he caused many people to do aveiros. The Amar, because we say in a brisa, Yeshua noitzri kishif v'hisis v'idiach v'hachbias Yisrael, he did magic. And he was his mesis and madiach. He convinced people to worship Avodah Zarah, and therefore he caused many Jews to sin. So we see, in other words, that all of this was triggered by Rabbi Yisroel ben Prachit pushing him away b'shnei yadayim. So the Gemara finishes off. Tanya Roshim ben Elazar, Yetzer, as far as the urge for tashmish, tinek or child, v'isha or wife, all of them, taste, smell, doichavi, and min makarevis, you all have to have with all of them, the left hand pushes away and the right hand brings close. In other words, again, particularly with them, Rashi explains, the yetzer of tashmish, you don't want to completely reject it, you need to do puruvu after all. On the other hand, if you bring it too close, then you're going to end up using it inappropriately. As far as a child, same thing. You push him away completely. Chassar Shalom, he might go and commit suicide. And a wife also, she might go out with child withdrawal. She might go then and behave and do znus or whatever. So with all of them, you have to be careful. You have to bring close with the right. And to the extent you need to push him away, should be with the weaker hand with the left. Okay. Mishnah says, Nimtza horeg ad shel ner for ha'egla. If they find the killer, here we're talking about still the body that was found outside the city, for which they brought the egla, Rufa. So if the killer was found, actually, near for egla, before the egla was decapitated, then fine, the animal was mutter b'hana, takes the tira b'eder, it can go out and graze in the herd with the rest of the animals. Rashi points out not everybody agrees with that. There's actually a Gemara in Krisus that says there are opinions that say that once the animal is brought down into the Nachal Eisan, then already it becomes Osabana, even if they don't end up having to go through the procedure. But our Mishnah is not saying that. Anyway. If it happens after the animal is decapitated, to cover the mekayman, and you still bury it in its place, it's also bahana, shall suffik, vav suffik chilasa. Because after all, the egla rufa is only brought to begin with because of the suffik. Very well. Kipra sveik of a hochala, so it accomplished kapara for the suffik. In other words, that's it. Up until that point, they hadn't found the killer. Therefore, they had to do the egla rufa. Now the fact that they found him, fine. He himself needs to be executed, but still, that doesn't take away from the fact that up until now, the egla rufa had accomplished a certain kapara for them. So therefore, so it's kippur sveika, so it's mechapra on the suffix, the whole halal, and it's gone, and that's it, it accomplished its purpose. Next, continues the mission, and therefore, ha'egla v'achakach nimtza ha'horeg, if they decapitated the calf, and then afterwards they found the killer, ha'rezi ha'horeg, they still executed. Rashi points out on the pasuk, you shouldn't think that maybe once they did the procedure with the egla rufa, that's it, it's a complete kapara, and we don't have to deal with the guy anymore. No, the pasuk says that no, you still have to kill him. Eid echad omer ro'isiyah sahorik. Suppose one witness says, I saw the killer. The eid echad omer loy ro'isiyah. And another one contradicts him and says, you didn't see. For example, this person that you're accusing was someplace else at the time. Or ishay meres ro'isiyah v'ishay meres loy ro'isiyah. If one woman says, I saw him, and saw him means I can recognize who he is. And another one says, you didn't see. Ho you open, they would still do the egla rufa, because the point is, the mission is going to establish that if anybody knows who the killer was, we don't do the egla rufa. But here, where you have one person, one aide contradicting the other aide, then you don't have any aiders over here, so therefore you're back to square one. Also, if one aide says, I saw, and two contradict them and say, you didn't see, also, how you're open, then also they would do the egla rufa. The Gemara will talk about what the chiddush of that part is. On the other hand, if two Adam said, we saw him, and we recognize him, and one says you didn't, then they don't do the egla rufa, because now you have Adam that know who the killer is. The whole point of the egla rufa is when we don't know who it is. So now, the Mishnah continues, Mishra Rabu HaRetzchanin, once murderers became more prevalent, but La Egla Arufa, then they had to stop doing the Egla Arufa. That is specifically Mishra Bar Eliezer Ben Dinai, specifically when Eliezer, or Elazar, it says in Mishnayos, Ben Dinai came along. He lived towards the end of the Second Mishnah Mikdash. He's actually mentioned, Josephus mentions him in his histories as well. He was a famous robber, he was a famous leader of robbers at that time, like 30 or 40 years before the Churban. About 20 or 30 years, really, before the Churban, whatever, and he was known to have committed lots of murders, so therefore, at that point, there's a high likelihood when we see a dead body, we know it was from him and his gang. Utchina ben Prisha Hayanikra. He was actually at one point called Tchina ben Prisha, which is, Ma'ushar explains that that was an alias he used, so people wouldn't have in order to, you know, because people, so people should know who he is. Ben Haratzchan. Later on, though, people called him Ben Haratzchan, the murderous person, meaning that those people weren't fooled by his calling himself by a Hasidic name, Tchina ben Prisha, having to do with Prisha, so they realized him for what he is, and they called him Ben Haratzchan. Okay, you know, there's different explanations exactly what this phrase means in the Mishnah, and there's a few different explanations, but whatever, the point is, in other words, Yeshayim, that actually Tchina ben Prisha and Elazar ben Nai are two different people. Whatever the case, the point is, there was a period there towards the end of the second Beis Mikdash when there were lots of murders going on, and therefore they couldn't do the Egel Aruch anymore. Mistama, I mean, we should still realize, of course, you know, when we say a lot, you know, relatively speaking, I mean, you know, it's still been compared to what you have in, you know, in Chicago and in some places nowadays with people killing each other. But Misharabu Hamanafim, once adulterers became more prevalent, people are committing adultery, Posku Maim Amorim, then they stopped doing the Maim Amorim, the Maim Amorim, the Meisota. Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, he's sikon, specifically it was Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai who said to stop doing it. That's what I was going to discuss. Yeah, Shenema, because the pasuk says, "Loi efkod abneseichem kisis nena." I will not look after anymore. I will not efkod can also mean to punish. I will not punish the slayers. Abneseichem on your daughter's kisis nena when they're committing adultery. But alkaleseichem and on your daughter's-in-law kisina afna when they commit adultery. Kihem v'goimer, because the pasuk goes on to say that they imazonis yiforedu. Which means that the husbands are being mizaneh, which is euphoredu, meloshin pered, Rashi says, meloshin a mule, so the husbands themselves are being mizaneh, and the whole point is, meisoita works only when the husband himself is not guilty of such avedus, as we'll talk about in the Gemara. So once it started becoming more prevalent that people are doing znus, then therefore they have to stop the meisoita, because it's not gonna work anyway. Continues, since we're talking on that topic, the Gemara mentions, by the way, other things that ceased at some point in Jewish history. Mishemes Yosef ben Ezer, Ish Tzreda, Yosef ben Yehuda, or really supposed to be Yochanan, Ish Yerushalayim, once those two Chachamim passed away, who are the first of the Zugas, Butlu HaEshkoilus. At that point, the Eshkoilus ceased to exist. Eshkoilus stands for Isha Kol Boy, a man who has everything in him, meaning up until that point, they were talking, they were a little over 1,000 years after Mount Torah, the Torah, Shabbat Peh, was given over perfectly from generation to generation, and there was no Machloikas that lasted. If there was ever a Machloikas, they went to the Sanhedrin and they got it resolved. In Yosef ben Ezer, and Yosef ben Yochanan's time, Machloikas began. So the Torah was not being given over and learned as perfectly as it had been before. But up until that point, they were the Ashkolos. They were literally Ashkolos, means clusters of grapes, but it stands for Isha Kol Boy, a person who has everything of Torah in him. Shenema, when we find a pasuk that Ashkolos is used to refer to Tzadikim, Ein Eshkolech, or the pasuk says there's no cluster of grapes to eat, Bikura Ivsa Nafshi, my soul desires the first ripe figs, and the next pasuk in here is Ovar Tosin and Ovar Tosidim are gone from the world. So therefore, so we see that Ashkolos refers to such people. Next, continues the Mishnah, Yochanan Kohen Gadol, Hever Hadoyas HaMaiser. Yochanan Kohen Gadol, who he was, there were a number of different Kohenim Golem in the time of the second Mishnah, named Yochanan, there's different opinions who it was. Was it the father of Matisyahu, we say in our Nisim, Matisyahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol, so does it refer to him? Is it a son of Matisyahu? Is it a grandson of Matisyahu? Whatever, one of them, anyway. Hever is Yeshayim, it's also the one who became a Tzaduki after 80 years. Anyway, Hever Hadoyas HaMaiser, he took away that they shouldn't say Vidri Maiser anymore, for reasons that we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow. He also made stop the Ma'urin and the Noikvin. Ma'urin means the ones who wake up. Noikvin means the ones who hit. And the Gemara will explain what that, and the Gemara will explain on Dachan and Ches what those mean. Ad Yomav Hayapatish Makav Yerushalayim, up until his times, hammers would strike in Yerushalayim. During Anchalamoyed, blacksmiths would be working, because they figure it's a dover over, it's something that otherwise the work is going to be lost, we're going to lose our opportunity to do this, and such a thing is allowed on Anchalamoyed. But he said that no, because the noise of hammers of blacksmiths is very noticeable, and therefore it's not the kovadik to Chalamoyed, even if they have a heter for dover over, but still not to do such loud work.
Dabra Avod is food, but...
No, Dabra Avod applies to other things as well. It applies to other kinds of work where if you don't do it during Chol HaMoed, you're going to lose the opportunity. So you have a heter to do it on Chol HaMoed, but he said not loud music, not loud work like that. In his times, no longer did anybody need to ask about Dmai, meaning up until now, you'd have to ask, was this food Maiser or not? He made the whole concept of Dmai and the idea that you take Maiser, that you take Maiser from Mitmisopik, and that way, nobody, you don't need to ask the Amoritz anymore and see whether you can rely on it. You just treat it as Dmai and you take off Maiser from it and then, and so forth.
This fish has good things and bad things.
Somebody, yeah. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Turn it up on. Minayim she nerfa egla. How do we know, as we said in the Mishnah, that even if the egla was decapitated, v'achakach nimsa ahodig, and then we find the killer, she'ein poterasai. So the fact that the egla was killed doesn't pater the murderer. Shenet tamadoyma. Therefore, the pasuk says, v'la'oretz la'yichupa la'dama she'shubach ba, p'yim v'dam she'ifa. The pasuk says, for the land, the blood that was spilled in it will not be atoned only with the blood of the one who spilled it, meaning you still have to execute the guy. Rashi on the Pasuk, where there brings it actually from the back, the end of the part of the Egla Rufa, it says, V'ata tevara doman noki mikubecha, you should clean up the innocent blood from among you, meaning that you still have a responsibility to kill the killer if you find him. Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said, we said if one aide says I saw the killer and another aide says that he didn't. So the Gemara says time of the Makishle. So why are we saying that we still go ahead with the Egla Rofa? Apparently because the Mishnah is implying only because you have a second aide that contradicts him. Hole Makishle, implying that if nobody contradicts him, aid echad mehenam. Then one aid would be believed, and once we have one aid who says I know who the killer is, then that means we don't do the Egla Rofa. So Manohani Mili, where do we know that from? The Tananabana, we learn in a Braisa, the Pasuk says, Loi noida mihiko, it's not known who killed him. That implies, Han noida mihiko, implying if it is known who killed him, I feel echad the sefer olam, even if there's only one person at the end of the world who knows, Loi haya open, then they wouldn't do the Egla Rofa. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Now, Akiva says another point. Minayim Sanhedrin Shiro Echad Shaharak Sanefesh. How do we know also that suppose the Sanhedrin themselves sees a person who killed the Ein Makir? No, he says they don't recognize who he is. Now, unlike in the case of the Edom of our Mishnah, we're saying that the Ed says Reisio Yisei means I can recognize it. Here we have something else. Rabbi Akiva is talking about the members of the Sanhedrin saw the guy kill, but they don't recognize him, whether he was wearing a mask or whatever. They don't know who he is. Anyway, Shaloi Ha Yerofen, how do we know that in that case they also don't do the Egla Rofa? Tamad Lema, Ve'enein Uloi Ro'u, therefore the Pasuk says that the members of the Beis Din have to be able to say, our eyes did not see the Haloi Ro'u, here they did see, so therefore that blocks us from doing the Egla Rofa. Now, so the Gemara says, Hashta De'amut Eidecha Meheiman, so now that you're telling me that one aid is believed, and then the question is, Idochad Hechimati Machishlei, then how could a second aide come and contradict him anyway? Well, Omar Ula, didn't Ula say, and Rashi points out that from here on until the end of the Sugya, which is a third of the way down the wide lines, this point of the Gemara is going to be almost an exact repetition of what we had earlier on Daf Lamed Aleph, because we have those three cases in Halacha where the Torah believes one aide. One is this case of an Egla Rofa, where if you have one aide who knows who the killer is, then you don't do the Egla Rofa. Another one we had earlier in the sixth Perek of Our Masechta, we had if one person saw that the Sota became Tomei, then we don't have her go through the whole Sota procedure. The whole point is only when we have a Suffolk whether she became Tomei. And the third example is to give aiders that a woman's husband died, she shouldn't remarry. So in all those three places, we had this almost word for word in Yevamos as well, and we had it earlier in Our Masechta, and here we have it the third time, where the Gemara is going to go through this whole din of one aid versus two aid. So it's almost word for word. Anyway, so didn't Ula say, Kol Mokam Shemina Torah Aid Echad, whenever the Torah believes one aid, Hare Kan Shnaim, that's the equivalent of having two, because that one aid has the strength of two aidim, the Ein Dvarav Shal Echad Mokam Shnaim. And one aid's words don't stand up against two. So if you have, if Reuven comes and says, I know who the killer is, then he's already counted like two aidim. So now if Shimon comes and says no, because that person you're accusing was someplace else at the time, or you were someplace else at the time or whatever, how can we believe one aid against, in effect, two aidim? So the Gemara says, Omalach Ula. So Ula will tell you, you're right. Tony Loi Hoy Open. As a matter of fact, you have to change the wording of the Mishnah. The Mishnah should say they don't do the Egla Rufa in that case. Because you're right. One aid can't contradict what we consider now to be two aid. The Chenom Rabbi Yitzchak Tony Loi Hoy Open. Rabbi Yitzchak says the same thing. On the other hand, Rav Priya, I'm a Tony Hoyo Ofen. Rav Priya disagrees and says, no, you still have to keep the words in a Mishnah that you do the Eglah Rufay in that case. Well, the question is, Rav Priya Tashid Ullah, what is Rav Priya doing with Ullah's statement? Now, of course, the Gemara could answer very simply, so what? Rav Priya can disagree with Ullah. But the Gemara is assuming that he's not. This that Ullah says is an ungenumina thing, is an accepted thing in Shas, and we shouldn't assume that Rav Priya disagrees with it. So the answer is, Loi Kasha, Kan Bavasachas, Kan Bazachazeh. There's a difference between the Mishnah is talking about where they both gave aid, both Adim gave Adus Bavasachas one after the other. So therefore, so before Beis Din even had a chance to accept the first one's Adus, the second one already came and spoke up. Tosfos earlier on Lamed Aleph from Adbeis discussed the question, when you say Bavasachas, do we mean literally B'toch Kedei Dibur, or do we mean before Beis Din actually did something based on what he says? Or issued a verdict based on what he says. But whatever. So then that would be the Mishnah. Therefore, so the one aid doesn't yet have the strength of two aidim because Beis Din didn't do anything based on his testimony. Whereas Ullah is talking about where the first one came and gave aidus, and later on the second one came. So by the time he comes, the first one already has the strength of two aidim. Okay, the Gemara says Tanan. Well, let's look at our Mishnah. Aid echad omer reisiyas ahorig. The Mishnah says if one aid says I saw the killer, or shnayim loy reisa, and two aidim say that he did that, and two aidim say you didn't see him. So hoyu ofen, then they would go ahead with the eglah rufa because the two contradict the one. So the implication seems to be hochad v'chad lo hoyu ofen, implying that if it was one aid against one aid, you wouldn't. That's why the Mishnah has to stress that only two aidim came the second time. Well, wouldn't that be a contradiction on Rebchia? Because according to him, one aid against one aid could be enough in some cases, where it's one after the other. So why is the Mishnah saying only two? So the answer is that. According to your Svara that you're even asking the question, look at the next part of the Mishnah. If two aidim say we saw and one aid says you didn't see, then we don't do the Eglah Rufa. Are you going to imply from that? Are you going to infer from that? That if it's one against one, you do, according to the logic we just said, that no, if you have one against one, you don't necessarily. So therefore, so obviously what you're being medayik from the Mishnah is not so exact. Ella masnisken kolav psula edus. Rather, what you have to say is the entire Mishnah is actually not talking about regular kosher edim. Then you would apply Ullah's rule that one aid counts as if he was two. Rather, we're all talking about psula edus. We're talking about that the people who came were women or people who have done certain averus that are psula edus or relatives or whatever. V'chidur of Nechemya. So therefore, our Mishnah is following what Nechemya says. De Omer, Reb Nechemya says, kol mokum shem in a Torah eid echad. Any place, all of these three places here, and by the Sota, and by a woman's husband, by a woman's husband's death, where the Torah believes one aid, holach acha roiv deis. Then what you actually do is you go according to the majority of opinions. You see how many people there are on each side. And v'os shtei noshim v'ish echad k'shnei anoshim v'ish echad. So the Chachamim considered that two women against one man are the equivalent of two men against one man. So in other words, the two women outweigh the one man. So when the Mishnah is saying that you had one aid saying that I saw, and two aidim saying that not, the two aidim are actually women, and the point of the Mishnah is that nevertheless they overbalance him. So the vote would be, in other words, that we're not necessarily, therefore, that's why the Mishnah gives the various scenarios of one aid versus two aidim, because by psula aidus, you don't say whichever one came first has the force of two aidim. Rather, you actually have to look at the number of people on each side. The Ikadamni, others learn from Nechemya's statement in me. No, when one kosher aid, now according to the first version of Rav Nechemya that we just explained, it would mean that even if you had one kosher aid come to begin with, but then you have two women come after him, then they would still be mevatel as aiders. He's one, and Ullah said he had the force of two, but nevertheless, because in this case, we're not following the regular rules of aiders, because we're talking about a scenario where the Torah is even accepting one aid, then therefore, that indicates that we're not following the usual rules of Eidos, rather we strictly go according to a numerical majority. The Ikadam, the others say no. When one kosher aid comes to begin with, And then, yes, he does have the power of two. And then even if 100 women followed him, they would only be considered like one. And we would say we have one against one, and that's not enough to contradict him. And the scenario in the Mishnah would be, we're the first one. The one that came was a woman. In which case, understand Rav Nechemya's statement as follows. Rav Nechemya, Makom Mokom Shemina Torah Eda, but whenever the Torah believes one aid, Holachacha Roiv Deis, then you follow the majority opinion, but it means now the Gemara is inferring something different from what Rav Nechemya said. But also, Shtei Noshim B'Isha Achas, Ki Ishne Noshim B'Isha Achad. Two women against one woman are the equivalent of two men against one man. Meaning, in other words, that only then do you go according to the majority. But when you have two women against one man, then it's like half and half, then it's evenly balanced. So again, if the first aid was kosher, then no number of women can outweigh him. But if the first one was posel, then a larger number of women or a larger number of psula aiders can outweigh them. So you want to ask the Tarti Psula Adris Lomali, in that case, why does the Mishnah have to say two cases of Psula Adris? And the answer is Mao Detainment, because otherwise you would have thought, Kiyaz Lumen Bosser Roiv Deis Lachumra. When do we follow the majority of the people? It was only Lachumra to accept their Adris and say that, nevertheless, we still have to go through with the Eglad Rufa. Ava Lakula, but at the end of the Mishnah, what it talks about cases where you don't do the Eglad Rufa, lo, you would think that not. Kamash Malam, therefore we're told that Rav Nechemya's rule applies whether Lachumra or Lakula. So always the rule is if the first one was a kosher aid, then he has the force of two aidim, and therefore only two kosher aidim can outweigh him. But if the first one was apostle, then you go according to Roiv Deis, and then you have the Rambam explains that even, for example, let's say eventually you have 10 women say that we know who the guy was, but 11 say that you don't, then we still go ahead with the Eglad Rufa, because 11, I you're gonna say you have 10 and you have 10 women, but nevertheless the 11 counterbalances the 10. We said in the Mishnah, Mishirabu HaRoitzchin, and Mishirabu HaRoitzchin, once Roitzchin became more prevalent, then they stopped the Eglah Rufa. So turn it up on Mishirabu HaRoitzchin and Botla Eglah Rufa, then the Eglah Rufa stopped. The Fishayin Abba, Elala Suffolk. Because the whole point of the Eglah Rufa is it's brought only for a Suffolk. But now that you have a Lozer Ben Dinai and others like him, so now you know, and so therefore, Mishirabu or it's Chonin Begolui. So once you have more prevalently people who kill in open, Butla Eglah Rufa, and then at that point the Eglah Rufa had to be stopped. Then we said in the Mishnah Mishirabu Hanoyafin Chola, we said once people who commit adultery became more prevalent, then they had to stop the Meisarta. So turn it up on him. The pasuk is v'nika ha'ishme oven. The man will be cleansed of sin. So that means v'zman shal ishme nukum oven. I'm buying both kinds of ishtar, implying only when the man is clean, is cleansed of sin, only then does the water check his wife if she's a soita. And you have Macholikas Rashi and the Rambam, what we mean. According to Rashi specifically, he has to be clean of the Aveira of having relations with her after she became a Soita, where we learned at the beginning of the Sechta that she becomes also to him until she drinks the May Soita, so he has to not have done that. According to the Rambam, we mean in general Bias Asuras. Any Bias Asura would prevent the water from working on his wife, says the Rambam. Anyway. So Eina Ishma Nukum Oven, if the man is not cleansed of sin, Eina Mayim Boken Es Ishta, then the water doesn't test his wife. The Omer, as in fact we find in the pasuk, Loi Efkud Abenesei. So and we have another pasuk that expresses this point, as the Mishnah quoted, Loi Efkud Abenesei Chem Pieces Nenav Gomer. Hashem says, I won't punish your daughters when they commit znus because the men are doing avedus as well. So the Gemara says, Ma'i Omer. Why do we need a second pasuk? We have in Chumash alone we have this concept. Why do we need a pasuk from Nevi'im? So because B'chitema Oven Didei Ein, because from the pasuk in Chumash you would only know if the husband himself is guilty of such avedus. How do we know it also applies if his sons and daughters do such avedus and he doesn't prevent them? Therefore, the second pasuk from Hosea says, I won't punish your daughters when they commit znus, and I won't punish your daughters-in-law when they commit niv. So therefore, it has to bring that pasuk. V'chitema avon eishes ish ein. So you're going to say, fine, that only applies if they were doing the issur of eishes ish. Oven de pnuyoloi. Where do we see it also applies to the Aveda of having relations outside of marriage. Tashma, therefore the Braisa brought the end of the pasuk, ki haven azonis yiforedu, because they, the men, are going and yiforedu, they're acting like prodim, like mules, together with the zonis. The Makedashis, he's Abeichu, and they're bringing korbanos together with Kedashis, which is another word for zonis. So therefore we see that it's not just, it's other kinds of bias asuras as well. Okay, the Gemara says, "Maiva omla yovin yilovit." What does the end of that pasuk mean? That says a nation that doesn't understand yilovit will be confused. Will like be making efforts to find the truth and they'll be confused. What does that part of the pasuk mean? It means omer abalazim, omer lahem novi v'Yisrael. The novi is saying to the Jewish people, im atem akpiden al atmechem. If you're careful about yourselves to do what you're supposed to do, mayim bodkin nishaseichem. Then the water will test your wives as it's supposed to. V'im lab ena mayim bodkin nishaseichem. If not, then it won't. Meaning, in other words, you're wondering, you don't understand why is it there are more and more noyafos and yet the mei soita aren't working. The reason is you're not understanding that what it says. You in the positive that when the men are misbehaving, then the mei sota doesn't work for their wives either. Okay. All right, we'll continue tomorrow, Esther.